Brothers and sisters, those who are watching and listening in the outreach, I'm Brother Michael Banach from Fulton, Missouri. Every blessing of Yahshua be yours. Title of my remarks today is Diversities, Blessed, Negotiable, and Rejected. Because there's three categories I have found. This is going to be a challenging topic. It's funny, I'm even more frightened by the subject coming up on my continuing series of the commandments. The ninth commandment about lying. I just can't tell you how hard it is to put that material together. I had no idea that the subject of bearing false witness would touch the four corners of the universe. For those listening, it's March 11th, 2017. This is our regular Sabbath meeting. I see three kinds of diversity. Some dimensions of diversity are ordained of heaven. These are the blessed ones. These are the ones that Yahweh has made. And some things are worked out as cultural and personal differences. I call these negotiable. Two people get married, they find out the husband wants the window open at night, the bride wants it closed. These are negotiable areas of diversity. And some differences among us are simply wrong. There's some things we will not tolerate. So I'll be covering these three topics. Well, here's why I put this together. I'm looking ahead to the feasts. I remember going to the Brotherhood in England for the Feast of Unleavened Bread in, 2009. And I told them, I said, this is the last time you're going to see me for a long time. Because here at my home congregation, we are keeping the spring feast with more and more fervency, more depth. And I won't be able to come to you anymore like I used to. Now we're getting all bulked up for Unleavened Bread and Tabernacles both, and we're going to be doing it here. And we're going to have people come here who are very different than us. And my objective is to equip you, get you thinking, look ahead, and call you to sacrifice. There's going to be some sacrifices called upon you in anticipation of the people coming. Unless you don't want the assembly to grow. If you don't want the assembly to grow, then you can just punch out and, enjoy candy in the parking lot because I won't have much for you. This is with a view toward assembly growth. And I might add, while I'm thinking about it, we can't keep putting everything on the shoulders of the ministry. They can't do everything. The everyday member has to also be a minister as part of a network, a fabric of people all caring about each other. Now, let's see. I briefly mention my experience in China. This will not be a travel log. When they came to me, I was only at this new job assignment in California. I was only there 10 days. And they came to me and said that we want you to go to China. And I figured, okay, I've only been here 10 days. Either they like me or they're desperate. Either they like me or they're desperate or both. So, I don't know. China, I've never been there before. I landed in Hong Kong, and it was an emergency trip in Hong Kong, and I immediately was shuttled by a private driver to a factory in Shenzhen. China is a peninsula hanging kind of down. It's a giant place. It's not a little bitty crowded city. It's a giant place. And I immediately drove north to Shenzhen to the factory. I didn't get to enjoy Hong Kong until my work was finished, and I got to spend a couple of hours at the airport in Hong Kong. That was like being at home. Crossing the border to the industrial zone they created in Shenzhen, it was like going into a different world. And it was evident that the Chinese wanted to pull the talent out of Hong Kong. Hong Kong is an economic powerhouse, a bastion of freedom. And you can see why they insisted on having those freedoms when they were absorbed into China, about two decades ago, something like that. China is a beautiful country. Beautiful people, but it's spiritually dormant. They go through great lengths to make the streets look pretty, lots of foliage. I have some pictures if you want to see them. But censorship and control is obvious. There are web pages I cannot get there, but I can get here. I'm not saying right and wrong is dictated by what web pages you can get. Maybe we can live without Facebook, Google. Maybe we can live without Facebook, Google, and YouTube. Maybe we can live without those. We lived without them before, but those are blocked. You can't get those in Red China. There are news wires that I'd like to access. Most of those get through, but the comment sections are blocked out. They literally rewrite the web page. I don't know, maybe Randy Demet can tell me how they do this, but they capture the web page and they rewrite it, as it were, and bang, you don't see the comment section that you see here in the States. And if you dip into news wires on the web, you know that the comment section is almost as enlightening as the articles themselves. The censorship and control is obvious. I told over lunch, my counterpart there, I told him how in America, if your boss makes a mistake, not always, but in most environments, if your boss makes a mistake, you can politely go to him and tell him that. And say, listen, you did B before A, or there was a fact you didn't know about. And if you're diplomatic about it, that's appropriate here in this country because we're all inclined toward excellence. You know, when I explained that to my counterpart, his face froze. The thought of going to his supervisor with a downbeat message scared him. But otherwise, they're beautiful people. But the hardest part was the unavailability of clean food. It was very hard to get clean food. My associate there, he ordered lunch for me every time, and there was always some kind of vegetable thing. No oyster sauce, I kept emphasizing, no oyster sauce. And normally it was something red hot, really hot. And in one lunch, we had several guys around the table. They couldn't believe how effortlessly I was downing that hot stuff. And I turned to my counterpart. I said, this is candy for me. And he translated that to Chinese, and they thought that was so funny. But they also eat differently. And I'll mention more about that in a bit. They eat differently. And I went down to the buffet in that five-star hotel. All manner of unclean things. It was like Peter's sheet all over again. I zoomed in on a roast leg of lamb. I learned to get there early. Roast leg of lamb and grilled vegetables. Breakfast. Oh, my gosh. The oatmeal. Maybe they make it this way in England. I don't know. But the oatmeal was a kettle about a foot and a half high. And there was about 4 inches of water at the top. So it was... I don't know, why would you have all that water in there? I wanted to go in there and tell the guy, did you misread the directions? But this brings to mind the vision of Peter's sheet. And I'm going to read Acts chapter 10, 11 to 15. While Peter was in Joppa, in the house of a tanner, a guy named Simon, who was a tanner by trade. That will be important later. And he saw heaven opened, and a certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners, and let down to the earth, wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth, and wild beasts, and creeping things, and fowls of the air. And there came a voice to him, Rise, Peter, kill and eat. But Peter said, Not so, Master, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean. And the voice spoke unto him again the second time, What Elohim has cleansed, that call not thou a common. Now Peter was unsure of the interpretation. If you want to have fun, we have a lot of Christian friends out there, I suppose, who think the meaning of this passage is that we can't eat anything now. Anything goes. And if you want to have some fun, though, if you have a Christian friend you're on good terms with, the subject comes up, you can tell them, you know, Peter never ate that stuff. It happened three times. And on the second and third occasion, he still said, I never ate that before. So you know he didn't eat it on time one, occasion two. Then he got to occasion three, he was still able to say, I never ate that stuff. So three times he declined to eat it. And we have precedents in the book of Ezekiel where somebody pushes back. And says, Yahweh, no, I'm not going to do this thing you asked me. You know, what's going on here? It's tempting to conclude this vision means that all food is clean, but that was not the correct interpretation. In Acts 10:17, it says, Now while Peter doubted in himself what this vision which he had seen should mean, behold, the men which were sent from Cornelius, this budding convert, Gentile, he had made inquiry for Simon's house and stood before the gate. Later in Acts chapter 10, verse 28, Peter declares, And he said unto them, You know how that it is an unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company or come unto one of another nation. But Elohim hath showed me that I should not call any man common or unclean. There's actually one or two extra layers to this, not just the business of kosher, as we will find. A thoughtful analysis of the story will speak to at least three zones of diversity and empower us for the managing ourselves as a body and especially at the feasts. In these interactions with the Gentiles, the apostles got to learn about things that are, there's differences Yahweh has ordained, there's differences that are negotiable, and there's some that are non-negotiable. We will later come back to Simon Peter, his associates, and Cornelius. But I'm going to start talking about my material for now. The blessed dimensions of diversity are heavenly ordained. And that four-word title I have for these notes, the word blessed is one area of diversity. Here are some of them. I think the list is endless, but I've purposely forced it down to three types. Ethnic origin. Yahweh ordains the ethnicities, the nations, the peoples that are on this planet. He decides through what family tree you come through. You know, it's possible he could have made me the same guy. He could have made me a Chinaman. You know, that might be funny. Maybe I'd have more hair, you know. But he also ordains strengths and weaknesses. That's kind of hard to accept, but we'll see that in a bit. Let's go through this. Ethnic origin is what he decides. Your basic makeup in terms of ancestry. Your strengths and weaknesses, we're going to find he made those too. Economic status. We'll find that we don't have a whole lot of say over that when we're born. Later in time, we do. There's probably many other things that Yahweh has ordained for each of us. I think the list is endless, rhetorically speaking. Let's drill down through some of this. Ethnic origin. We're going to talk about the Samaritans as a case study. Now, Yahshua was looking into the future. Remember, he's trying to prepare this bunch to be ministers to a broader audience. And he honors the Samaritans in several ways. Now, let's tap the brake here. The Samaritans wound up in northern Israel after the Assyrian... I get them mixed up. The Assyrian exile or captivity? I get the captivity. Anyway, it was the Assyrians pulling all the Israelites out of the north, leaving the Jews and the Benjamites and some Levites in the south. And when the animals were taken over, they brought back some Levite priests to teach the new people they put there. They put new people there from different places in the world, and these priests taught them Yahweh's ways. So you had a whole bunch of people who had a similar religion in the north, and you had the Jews in the south. Yahshua honored them. I'm not saying he endorsed their religion, because he said to that woman at the well, you don't know what you're worshiping. But he did preach to a Samaritan woman at a well. That's in John 4, look around verse 7. There was a time when they were going to Jerusalem, and they were seeking lodging among the Samaritans. And the Samaritans wouldn't let them in because they heard they were going to Jerusalem. So I think it was Peter who said, Master, let's call fire down from heaven and burn them up like Elijah did. Yahshua said, no, you don't know what spirit you are of. The Son of Man came to save, not to destroy. And you'll find that in the locus of Luke chapter 9, verse 54. He constructed a great parable about neighborly love with a good Samaritan at the center of the story. It's amazing the impact that Yahshua has. If you do a Google search for Good Samaritan Hospital, you'll find a bazillion of them named after this Samaritan in this story. If you type in Good Atheist Hospital, you won't find one. Okay? It's amazing the impact Yahshua has had. It turns out you will find, if you type Good Atheist Hospital, you'll get like three hits of people saying the same thing I just said. I can't seem to find a good atheist hospital, okay? But in Acts chapter 1, verse 8, he prophesies their conversion. That's when he sends the apostles forth, and he says, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, and all Judea, and Samaria, and even unto the remotest parts of the earth. So it's like these concentric circles. First Jerusalem, Acts chapter 2, then all of Judea, than Samaria. And the conversion of the Samaritans is noted in the book of Acts, but there's nothing scandalous about it. By this time, they're all buttered up to accept the Samaritans. And after all, they're already circumcised. They're already obeying the clean food laws. It's kind of easy to pull them in. An important element here is that the Samaritans deferred to the teaching of the apostles. You look at Acts chapter 8 to find the story of the conversion of the Samaritan. But an important element is that in the spiritual realm, when the apostles preached, the Samaritans were convicted. And that's an important part. That even works today as we're reaching out to people, whether they are here in the room or they see the videos or listen to the audio. The Holy Spirit will be playing upon their heart, and they have to understand that we're conveying the truth. And this is not a trivial matter. It becomes important later as I pull all these subtopics together. The Samaritans were a different ethnicity. The similarities in religion helped them to be accepted. Yahshua honored them to smooth their acceptance. But on their side of the transaction, it was important that Yahweh's Spirit convict them of the truth. The apostles had the goods, and the Samaritans knew it. And this is significant. Talk more about blessed dimensions of diversity, strengths and weaknesses. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 10 through 11, Moses is being recruited for the ministry. And he's being told to go to his people. Now, his complaint was about going to his people at this passage. He was afraid of facing his own people. He said unto Yahweh, O Yahweh, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. And Yahweh said unto him, Who hath made man's mouth, or who maketh the dumb, or the deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I Yahweh? Yahweh takes 100% responsibility for these things. There's really a lot going on here. Now, when Stephen was testifying before the Sanhedrin in the book of Acts, chapter 7, he said, And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and deeds. So how do you reconcile this? Moses is saying, hey, I'm slow of speech, I'm not eloquent. But Stephen says he was mighty in words and deeds. Well, he's talking about from the standpoint of the Egyptians. Moses was raised 40 years as an Egyptian. He was raised in Pharaoh's court. Then he ran off and he worked 40 years in Midian. So whatever Hebrew he knows, he has an Egyptian accent. Then he hangs around people speaking Midianite Hebrew. Now the Midianites spoke Hebrew too. By the time he comes back and leads the Israelites, his accent must have been horrible. You know, we've heard these people, like you ever get people here talk to people who speak English from Ghana or some of these far-flung places in the British Empire. They speak English, but their emphases are off. And how about that famous story in our history, Yaluk Bluk Bins? How many know the story of Yaluk Bluk Bins? Yaluk Bluk Bins? Elder Don Mansager was in the food line in the Philippines. I'll bet Sister Meljan Martin knows what I meant. But in the food line, and some guy said, turned to Elder Don and said, I said, Brother Yaluk Bluk Bins? Elder Don didn't know what to do, so he just smiled and shook his head. He said, I said, Brother Yaluk Bluk Bins. But it turns out what he was saying is, do you like black beans? Do you like black beans? I'll say it again. Do you like black beans? Do you like black beans? I practice these things, okay? But this is what Moses must have sounded like talking to his people. An Egyptian accent, and he's hanging around 40 years with the Midianites. You know, he must have sounded terrible. Note that his cultural ethnicity was also chosen by Yah. More on strengths and weaknesses. In Exodus 40, 10 through 11, I'm sorry, in Exodus chapter 4, 10 to 11, Yahweh takes responsibility for making all weaknesses, even for the circumstances that led to Moses' lack of eloquence among his own people while sounding mighty before Pharaoh. So he really sounded like that movie when he went to Pharaoh, let my people go. He really sounded like that movie. But before his people, he sounded very awkward, and he had to work through Aaron. And he said unto me, I'm going to quote here from 2 Corinthians 12:9. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of the Messiah may rest upon me. Yahweh has a divine purpose for all of our weaknesses. And once you're able to locate them and zoom in on them and minister to them and live with them and work around them, you get a taste of the kingdom. Another dimension of diversity is economic status. Two scriptures, a lot of scriptures that come to mind, but Deuteronomy 8:18, he says, but thou shalt remember Yahweh the Elohim, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. If you find you have an excess of wealth, it's Yahweh who did that. You should be asking yourself, Father, what am I supposed to do with this? I got more than I need. What am I supposed to do with this? You should be asking him. In Luke 4:18, Yahshua honors the poor. The Spirit of Yahweh is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the good news to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised. One thing I've noticed over the years, now I was baptized at Trumpets, 1980, so I have a few more miles on the odometer than most of you. One thing I've noticed, though, that there are people out there who are dealing with a good deal of pain. Their personal circumstances, their economic status, bad memories, bad things happen to them, or they're ill. And when they hear these truths that we publish, they say, hey, there's something special here. There's something powerful here. And it's only natural that people who are suffering would be drawn to us. And I would like to have answers for them. Either total closure or a means of coping. This business of economic status is yet another area into which we are born. It might take a generation or two to crawl out of a tough start, but Yahweh has the final say. Now, in my case, my family was like middle-class American, doing pretty good, actually. Then my parents split up, and it was rough. Ooh, it was rough. And so I was the first one in the family to go to college, but crawling out of that hole took some doing. And it's funny, the overall message of the Messianic ethic is that if you have a lot of stuff, if you're blessed a lot, Yahweh requires more of you. And often having been blessed in a sort of a natural physical realm, you'll find that sometimes sorrows come with that. It's not all that it's meant to be. Whatever your status is, you should be asking Yahweh where he wants you to be and what he wants you to do. I'm going to review what I covered so far. In terms of blessed dimensions of diversity, they're heavenly ordained, but they might be modified. Ethnic origin, you know, you can change your citizenship. You can change your attitude. You can migrate to another country if you want. I migrated to a different state. Baptism, you can take on the mind of the Messiah. And take, you know, the true Israelite is a learner and an overcomer. You can take your ethnic origin and you can reorient it to Yahweh's will by a conscientious assertion of your will. You'll have to pray for grace, but he's delighted to join you in that conquest. Strengths and weaknesses. You have education, you have exercise, you have discipline. It may be that Yahweh wants you to live with that weakness. Paul did, a very famous weakness. It looks like his eyesight was going. But he said, I'm going to rejoice in this. Economic status, you can change that with diligence. You can change that with wise decisions. But Yahweh has final say. Opportunity may be limited, or Yahweh just wants to send you in another direction. But these are zones of diversity that Yahweh has blessed. He's ordained. He's the originator of them. And they only change if he says so. And we can engage him in prayer and say, help me change some of these things. So I've laid out three blessed areas of diversity. There's probably more: ethnic origin, strengths and weaknesses, economic status. How do we treat those who are different than us in these realms, seeing that Yahweh has put them there? How do we treat people who are different than us? I'm going to read a passage from James, chapter 1 through 9. This is a long one. You know, in the Sacred Name movement, the book of James is one of the most popular books. So you all should be very comfortable with this, including the parts that challenge us. My brethren, have not the faith of our sovereign Yahweh. Start over. My brethren, have not the faith of our sovereign of Majesty, Yahshua the Messiah, with respect of persons. For if there come into your assembly a man with a gold ring and goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and you have respect to him that weareth the fine clothing, and say to him, sit thou here in a good place. And say to the poor, stand thou here, or sit here under my footstool. Are you not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts? Hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not Elohim chosen the poor of this world rich in faith, and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him? But you have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? Do not they blaspheme that worthy name by which you are called? If you fulfill the royal law according to the scriptures, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, you do well. But if you have respect to persons, you commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors. Now back in verse 5, I underlined the following words: hath not Elohim chosen the poor of this world rich in faith? And some of you know I've spent a lot of time visiting congregations different than me, people who are far more spiritual than me. And there is this common denominator. When they are poor and give themselves to more prayer, they get more done by Yahweh's Spirit. Are we sure? You know, are we sure we want all the stuff we have? The poor of the world, rich in faith. So how do you treat people who come in here? I remember, I enjoyed looking back to the great lessons I learned, and I will always celebrate Elder Don Mansager's message. Toward the end of one of our feasts, I'm going to have to paraphrase, because you know what happens is often we remember how we feel and how a message is received, and the exact words are elusive. But he had evidence that some of the members at the feast were getting on each other's nerves. Sometimes that happens, doesn't it? And he said, you know, if you're getting irritated with your brother, maybe Yahweh put that irritating person in the assembly just to teach you patience. I remembered that. You know, it meant a lot to me to hear something of spiritual depth at a feast that I attended. I say, okay, this guy is able to look deeper than just, you know, these four square doctrines that we publish. But this business of human interaction is an important part. Maybe this is a good time to tap the brake. I always enjoy talking about this. Brother Mike believes the kingdom is fun and games. It really is. I think the kingdom is frisbee, bake-offs, board games, game night over there in that other room over yonder. I think it's horseshoes and quoits, if we ever get going on that again. I think it's just fun and horseback rides. I think the eternity is going to be one blast. Then we punch out. We say, okay, it's serious. We're going to worship for a while. You know, let's tighten up our spines, clear our throats, and worship Yahweh and the beauty of holiness. But I think the kingdom is funny stories. I think it's good, clean laughter. The kingdom is doing wholesome things with those I care about, fun things. Surely we want to get to know each other and enjoy this great creation that Yahweh's laid before us. I have this fantasy of dancing on the rings of Saturn. Maybe one of you will join me for that. Maybe we'll find they're not rings after all, that it's just a bunch of dust. But Yahweh's laid out this whole creation for us. But to enter that kingdom of the fun and games, we can have much of it now. We have to learn to engage each other in love despite our differences. Why would Yahweh place his own people at a seeming disadvantage? You know, sometimes people are poor, or they're weak, or they come from bad upbringing. Some people come into the faith, man, they have family issues, they've inherited, oh my lands, some of this stuff is hair-raising. It's a long study as to what Yahweh's doing there, but I think the best way to get through this question now is to turn us to Matthew 25, where Yahshua looks ahead at one of the judgment day scenarios. He has the sheep and the goats before him. And to the sheep, he says, "Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." Continuing with Matthew 25, verse 35. "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in." I should have underlined that for today. "Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me." Now, if you look at the passage, Yahshua is saying this is the nations. I've said this many times. This is not talking about us, but it is for us. You see, if you're doing the work, you're not going to look up at him and say, "When did I see you hungry? When did I see you in trouble?" You won't talk like that because you're doing the work. You're already Yahshua's disciples. This is the nations. And here's how it works. Yahweh puts upon the heart of the nations a conviction to be kind to us and show us kindness. And on that basis, they get an eternal reward. I don't know why. It sounds like salvation by works, doesn't it? But they don't know, and that's the key to this. As we go about our business, Yahweh is going to convict people to help us. I've gotten countless breaks from people who are not in the faith. I think you have too. And there's going to be others who say, "When did I see you in need?" And he's going to say, "You never came through. You never stepped up." But we who are in the household of faith, we're never going to be surprised on the day of judgment. This is a fulfillment of Genesis 22:18. "And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." This was a promise to Abraham. Now, there are many judgment day scenarios. There's a lot of things that's going to be going on. We are being judged now. These other people will be judged in the future. But think about it. If he requires this of strangers, the nations, what about you and me? So even though I don't think this is about us, it sure is for us. Because if he's expecting this of the nations, certainly he expects this of you and me. You're always going to have saints who are hungry, thirsty, strangers. We're going to have people come to us who seem like strangers. Very much in need of decent clothes. Some of among us will be sick, in prison, and we have to step up and be there for them too. Well, you talk about differences. You talk about diversity. I mean, I'm not hungry. I'm not thirsty. I'm not a stranger. You know, all these things. I still have to jump outside my comfort zone and think about people in this situation, especially in the household of faith. Okay, this next one is so painful, I've decided not to put the details in the PowerPoint slide. But I might get choked up talking about it. Let's see if I can zoom through this episode quickly so we can get on with some more of the material. But in Chicago, you know, I lived there most of my life, but from 1989 to, maybe the last few years, because my move here was kind of a process. But when I didn't have anywhere to go on Sabbath, I would visit some Worldwide Church of God spin-off churches. And they were just enough like me that I thought, well, I'll hear a sermon. And, you know, I have relatives who are in that network anyway. But I went to one of the Worldwide spin-offs, And it was in a rich neighborhood. It was the kind of neighborhood where if you drive by the houses, I say to myself, that's a nice big house, but I wouldn't want to clean it. You know, that kind of house. Two stories, you know. And everything there was four square and nice. Everybody wore nice clothes. But there are other worldwide spinoffs that were in poor neighborhoods. I remember sitting at fellowship meal with the pastor at one of the poor neighborhood churches. And he let something slip. It was very convicting. This is his opinion. And even if his opinion's wrong, there's a perception there that he's dealing with. He said, we don't have much doing with the other churches. They don't want to get involved with our troubles. Well, that touched a nerve for me because, you know, I've lived in a lot of poor neighborhoods. And when my family was bouncing out of that ditch, I know what it is to be on the wrong side of the tracks. But this guy perceived a sense of rejection from fellow churches because they were prosperous and he was a pastor over a, well, I don't like to use the word church anyway, but that's what they call themselves. He had an assembly that had problems. We don't want to be involved with that. No, we don't want to get our hands dirty with that. Well, to tell you the truth, I always suspected this, but to have him say that, by the way, when I had a fellowship meal with the rich and prosperous church, I never got to sit anywhere near the pastor. But you should be thinking about, you know, what kind of impression you're leaving. Nice thing about modern communication tools is I can play with the fonts. Here I got congregational growth as a subtopic. You see the letters are getting big as you go, growth. If we only receive people that are just like us, our growth potential will be limited. Our growth potential will be one-dimensional. If we ever devolve into cliques, we are doomed. Click over there, click over there. How can you make it so that, you know, people are mingling nicely even when they have differences? I'm speaking on these subjects now before we have problems, okay? We're doing pretty good now. We're doing pretty good now. But I want to meet this head on because I see great potential for growth here. And you're going to have people come through that door who famous preacher calls them the EGR types, extra grace required. Okay, anybody, it's going to take some extra grace. So I told you this was going to be challenging, but I hope the wheels are turning. By the way, I know secrets. I ain't going to tell no secrets up here, but I know secrets. And so this encourages me while I'm up here. Because I have noticed out of the corner of my eye, when people don't think I'm watching, or I find out by accident, a number of you I have caught doing charitable deeds, kind deeds. I kind of find out about this stuff by accident. So that encourages me to press on with this. But you know, sometimes one of the greatest deeds is to really work to get to know somebody who's very different from you. It is absolutely electrifying to learn that Yahweh's working in the life of somebody who's very different than me, to see Yahshua in their face. Let's talk about negotiable dimensions of diversity. This is where it gets rough. Actually, I think this is rougher than any of them. Cuisine. How about household protocol? You're in my house, and you do something I never expected. How about personal tastes? Husband wants the window open, wife wants the window closed. Personal habits. If I knew you did that, I wouldn't have married you. How about style of dress? These are areas where there's going to be give and take. Sometimes these things cannot be tolerated. Let's talk about cuisine. In the case of some foods, I just can't stand them. I tell you right now, if you invite me to your home, there's just a tiny number of foods I can't eat them. I just can't. And I might have like a visceral response. You don't want that at dinner time. For example, a lot of people in this country like beef suspended in cheese sauce. How many people like beef and cheese sauce? I see some hands go up. Don't give me that. You don't want to see what happens to me with beef and cheese sauce in front of me. Then there's this taco chip thing that some of my Hispanic friends make. They put a salsa on there with cheese and sour cream. Oh, that is the bottom rung. I can't. To them, it's a delicacy. To me, oh, I can't. Oh, I think they put refried beans on there too. Even if it's kosher, my face will turn inside out. You don't want that. You don't want to give me that. Okay. What am I to do? You know, how can I tell you nicely? You invite me to your home. I have to tell you in advance. There's two things I can't eat. I just can't eat them. Don't give me this. Would you patiently allow someone to pass on a food he cannot handle? Let's go the other direction. There's one lovely family, Hispanic family in Chicago. And I got to the point where I had refrigerator privileges. You know, when you have refrigerator privileges with a family, you know you're accepted. But they were eating, as part of a larger meal, they were eating bowls of tripe soup. If you don't know what tripe is, look it up later. I'm not going to tell you. It's kosher, but they were slurping it up like it was a dying man's last wish. Okay? I couldn't. I decided to eat it, okay? That's a case where I gave in to them because I could handle it. I didn't like it, but I gave in. And, you know, I tried to enjoy it. Another thing I'll give in and enjoy, but I'd rather not eat okra. Okra's too slippery in my mouth. It's just, okay? But I'll give in, I'll eat it, you know, I'll go along. See, this is a negotiable area of diversity, cuisine. I'll give and take. Something you can't expect everybody to like everything you give them. And because I've been in that situation, when I serve people in my home, I make sure that they can eat what I'm going to dish up. Because I know what it is to be on the other side of the equation. We're going to have people come in here and bring stuff to fellowship meal, and maybe only a tiny number of us like it. And there may be nothing wrong with the dish itself. It's just not what we're into. Negotiable dimensions of diversity. I'm going to ask you to look at, I have it on the screen here, Acts 11, 2 and 3. And when Peter was come up to Jerusalem, they that were of the circumcision contended with him, saying, Thou wentest in unto men uncircumcised and did eat with them. And that's what I did in China. I met with uncircumcised men and I ate with them. It's kind of funny. When I got there, I had my carry-on luggage. Remember, I went there right from the airport, right to the factory, and my carry-on luggage was my two computer bags and my notebook and my Bible. And after a while, I realized these people have me walking around their factory with a Bible under my hands. It was kind of funny, because a Bible in red China, and I'm walking around with it as a personal accessory, you know. I explained over lunch to my counterpart. I said, I'm kind of like a Christian and kind of like a Jew, and I eat like kosher, and vegetables will be fine. Vegetables will be good. And but the way they ate, I may be on a later slide, but I'll mention it while I think about it. The way they eat, they actually put giant bowls of food in front of you. They often have a lazy Susan in which they pass it around, and they take their chopsticks and eat out of that common plate. All right? Now, what I did is I thought fast. I made it so the stuff I was going to eat came to me first, and I scooped lots of it into my dish. Okay? Now, I noticed that when they picked, they seemed to pick a zone in the bowl for them. Jack had his part of it. That other guy had another portion. But they were all kind of eating out of one bowl. Now, the way I was raised, you don't eat off of other people's dishes. I know there's families that do this, but I don't. In my family, we don't eat off of each other's dishes. We don't drink out of each other's cups. But some of you do. We don't do that. Okay. So I had to like protect myself from this negotiable thing, trying to eat kosher. But this thing with Peter, when he had that vision, I think there was more to it. I think Yahweh was telling him, you're going to go to places that will turn your stomach. Eating with someone is one of the quickest ways to learn their habits, their sense of hygiene, and their personality. In China, they like to present bowls and go round robin and pick away. But you learn a lot about people by eating with them. As an example of what the apostles had in for them, my research shows that Thomas converted the people in Southwest India. And today they call them St. Thomas Christians. And the historical evidence shows that they were very much Hebrew roots. We are very certain they kept Passover and unleavened bread and Seventh-day Sabbath from historical records. When the Jesuits got there, they found these Indian guys and also congregations in China running full blast, messianic in tone, keeping Seventh-day Sabbath. But if you could try to evangelize India today, I've talked to like the saints at in England, Congregation of Yahweh. There's some sacred namers who've gone to India, and they say, man, there's places in that country where the pollution in the air is so thick you can bite it. They let the animals run amok because of these reincarnation doctrines. They let animals run amok. Don't make me go into the details. They don't care. To them, the animals are sacred. You're going to go to places that turn your stomach. If you think that some of the people coming in here who are going to be different than us are hard to engage, just try going to a faraway place like that. Peter's correct interpretation of the vision will stand, but experience, research, and observation shows that the vision was a tip-off to hair-raising things he would endure when bringing the good news to the Gentiles. You have to have a special calling for that. Okay, we're going to talk about negotiable dimensions of diversity, personal habits. Sometimes these things are intolerable. I have developed a list of rules for my home because hospitality guests often do unexpected things, things I wouldn't want repeated in a future visit. So I have house rules for guests on hygiene, bedtime, lights out, Sabbath liberties, language, help with chores for long visits, probably other things too. Hygiene, you know. On occasion, I've had to tell a guest. My hospitality tradition goes way back, maybe several decades. And I've loved bringing people to my home. I love the pressure that forces me to clean up before they get there. I think that's good for me. But on occasion, I've had to tell somebody, I need for you to wash your hands before you leave the bathroom. Okay, I'm surprised. On occasion, I've had to say that. Now, bedtime lights out, I'd rather negotiate that. I'd rather say, what's a reasonable time? You know, because I want to know what to expect. I had one guy years ago, now he's not in the faith anymore, but I had one guy, he'd sleep all day and mope around the house all night. And I don't know what he was doing because this was before the internet. I don't know what he was doing all night. He was foraging in the refrigerator and everything. But I says, now I only bring these subject up if I think they're going to be a problem. Sabbath liberties. I don't do any cooking or anything like that in my home on Sabbath. But if someone comes with a baby, I'll let them make baby formula, you know, give and take. Language, certainly we're not going to tolerate profanity in our homes. How about help with chores for long visits? Might I bend on some of these things for the benefit of the uninitiated? You'll have to decide these things for yourself. But there's some things I've been burned on so that the next guest comes in, I say, listen, I've got an experience that leads me to ask you to abide by these rules. My experience, observation, and research. I use that phrase a lot. Forecasts the same challenges for us as every other congregation in the history of the faith. It's 2,000 years worth of history, friends. We are not immune to the challenge, but will we be victorious as friends, as a body? On occasion, the present assembly has been and will continue to be visited by newcomers who are borderline different, borderline offensive different than us, but they think they're doing fine. For them, we nervously and cautiously open our arms and decide what's most important in each case. Newcomers will have to humbly defer to the house rules and expectations of those who receive them. When we visit newcomers in their homes, we will find loving and creative ways to defer to their environment, even if it's a bowl of tripe soup. Okay? Might be that. I don't know what to... See, because I've been burned now, I tell people in advance, I don't do that taco chip with the sour cream. I don't do beef and cheese. I don't do any meats and cheese sauce. It has nothing to do with meat and milk. It's just a reaction it has with me. See, now, here, I'll give you an example. This slipped my mind until now. I went walking around the neighborhood where my 5-star hotel was, and I went down into a shopping plaza, and I found a real grocery store there, like a real produce store. And when I went down to a certain corner in the basement where they had lots of shops of different kinds, there was an odor down there that was indescribable. It was not bacteria-based. Okay? It was not a bacteria. It was like stale sesame oil or mixed with popcorn and fish or something. It was weird. I can't put my finger on it. But it took me over a day to get that out of my mind. I cannot unsmell that. But to them, that's normal. That was like that must be how they prepared some food down there. Just one of those things, you know. See, these experiences stimulated the remarks I have today, is that there's going to be people that have things in their lives that are hard for us to accept. There's going to be giving and taking in every one of these scenarios. Let me give you some examples on negotiable dimensions of diversity. Suppose you have guests in your home and they put excessive syrup on the pancakes. Okay, I would let them do it, even if I get less. Even if my family gets less, if my wife and kids are going to have less syrup because this guest made the pancakes like a boat in the bowl or something, and it doesn't matter. And my family would be pre-discipled to let the guests do what they want in that area. Now, here's where I got that idea. How many have seen the movie To Kill a Mockingbird? Have you seen that? That's a movie with a soul, huh? But there's a point in the story where Atticus Finch invites a poor boy for breakfast. And his daughter watches this boy pour a ton of molasses on the pancakes. And the little girl says, "What are you doing?" Now, Atticus Finch in this story, he's a widower. There's no woman in the home. But the hired maid, a black lady, grabbed that white girl, took her into another room and said, "That's your company, and if he wants to eat the tablecloth, you let him do it." Now, think about it. The story written by non-believers, maybe they were Christians, but this story written by outsiders, they understand the need to extend extraordinary hospitality to a poor boy who is different. I would pre-disciple my family to say, "Look, when we have company, they may do something strange. Let me handle it." I'd let them eat all the syrup they want. You never know what the future holds. You know, if something tragic happened down the road and you are rude to a stranger and something bad happened to them, you'd be flooded with regret in your heart. If only I had let them take more syrup or, you know, whatever. Here's another one. Do they change the baby's diaper in the open? You know, I would ask them to go to another room, the guest room or something. Could you do that? Could you please do that in another room? Now, I actually make this a house rule in advance. Can you guess why? Because I had somebody do that once. Pick your battles. Remember, Yahshua ate with sinners and with the poor. He must have put up with a lot. He did that so the disciples were kind of discipled on this business when they take the good news to the Gentiles. I bet they thought back many times, you know, where they would go traveling with him. And when he sat with these sinners, it isn't like he endorsed what they were into. He preached to them. I'm going to talk about, we're almost done. I'm going to talk about rejected dimensions of diversity. Examples: moral impurity, foul language, coarse jesting, doubtful disputations, heresy, clothing that defrauds. If you girls wear provocative clothing, it sends the message that you're emotionally available, but you're really not. That's defrauding us. We have no moral obligation to tolerate these and many other related things. In fact, I should have added number 7, violation of the Ten Commandments. There's dimensions of diversity we're just not going to tolerate. I don't even have to dwell on this. Come on, guys. Like moral impurity, you know. There's no diversity in marriage, okay? But Yahweh invented marriage. Yahshua defined it for us. We know what that is. There's nothing beyond that. But you know, at any moment, any one of us could slip on these things, couldn't we? At any moment. And it's fine with me if somebody taps me on the shoulder. And that's important for me to get that out there, is that I want to be available to you to approach me and say, Brother Michael, I think you should have known better than what you said or did. We should be open to each other for that. And those of you who are listening in the outreach, the audio, the video, you have to understand that too. When you come to us, you will have to be spiritually available to us. We might have to take you aside and say, Brother, this is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. I don't think you should have bought that hamburger. Okay? Something like that comes up. We're going to have to be spiritually available to each other and to newcomers. There's more. Those of you who are thinking of joining YRM, if you're not going to come in here with a servant's attitude, don't bother. I've seen time after time people in ministry get worn out, having to do so much by themselves. You've got to come with a servant's attitude. If you're not going to help out with chores, if you're not going to avail yourself to each other, you're better off not joining, because sooner or later you're going to sin. You know, you ought to go back and recalibrate that before you join us. You know, one favorite pastor of mine, he got so fed up, he said, if you're not going to help with the chores, the door's right over there. Now, that minister is far from here, but he's a beloved friend, and he was right. You just get worn out with people who don't want to join in and be part of the body. And also, for those of you who are thinking of joining YRM, a day is going to come when you will be sufficiently grounded that you too will be welcoming newcomers here, where the love is, where the good times are, where the friendships are. Let me just take a moment and talk about ironies in the story of Simon the Tanner. This was a last-minute throw-in, but I've wanted for years to tell you about this. This goes quickly. Peter had that vision of the sheet with the unclean foods. He was at Simon's house, the tanner, in Joppa. Joppa is where Jonah fled from Yahweh's instruction to preach to the Gentiles. Peter was uncertain about converting the Gentiles. But Simon the tanner had a notoriously foul occupation. I'm not going to go through the details. Look it up on Wikipedia or any place else. The job of a tanner in ancient times was indescribably foul. I don't want to dwell on it, but it's so bad. It's so terribly bad. I see Brother Lucas nodding his head. He may have heard about this. In fact, I'm not saying Jewish law is Yahweh's law, but in Jewish law, it allowed a woman to divorce a tanner even though she knew it was going to be hard. She could go before the Sanhedrin and say, look, I know I agreed to marry this tanner. I thought I could handle it, but I can't. That's a tip-off as to what an ugly job it was. And I give you the references here. It's in, for those who are into the Mishnah, Ketubot, chapter 7, verse 10. Ketubot. Those of you who are into the Mishnah can find it. So Peter tolerated the offensive environment of Simon the Tanner's house. A stinky place. But hey, Simon's a Jew, you know, circumcised. He's okay. It's okay. even though his house smells like 1,000 dead pigs, you know, he circumcised. He's okay. But visiting an Elohim-fearing Gentile, Cornelius, that was out of bounds until Yahweh gave him the go-ahead. Jonah fled from his ministry to the Gentiles, departing from Joppa. Peter went forth from Joppa to fulfill his ministry as commanded. Concluding remarks, only two more panels. People very different from us will be coming forth. New saints, different by Yahweh's will. New friends with habits and characteristics foreign to us. Inquirers who might not even know what sin is. The temptations to exclude and isolate will be strong. Seek grace to embrace all. It's a long-term game. I'm thinking long-term, not just let's have lunch and I never see you again, but I'm thinking long-term. But newcomers must also defer to us as they approach. In terms of doctrine, at times we may have to lay down rules and say, we don't do that here. There will be give and take. To whom more is given, more is expected. And sin, as a dimension of diversity, is unacceptable. It's non-negotiable. I'm going to conclude with this reading from 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law as without law, being not without law to Yahweh, but under the law to the Messiah, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this I do for the good news, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Well, in one version of these notes, it says, I underlined with you. It's that sense of community. I heard while I was away, we had a nice moving party. Yeah, all right? That's the kingdom. We brought a sister in from out of state, helped her move in. That's the kingdom. Okay. There's more of that to come, friends. Thanks so much.
Thank you for watching today's teaching. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel and stay up to date with all our latest releases. To stay connected to this ministry, download our mobile app. It's available in the App Store for Apple or Android. Simply search Yahweh's Restoration Ministry. Visit our extensive website at yrm.org. We have hundreds of teachings for men and women alike and new articles added every week. Join our growing online congregation and watch us live every Saturday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time by visiting yrm.org/live or following the live worship link on our mobile app. See below in the description on this video for many of the other ways to connect with us. Blessings and Shalom.